epw.org.
This is Talk Is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Sesti, here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. So, I'm going to continue on with my armchair economic observations here, opinions on the economy. Here, just a disclaimer, this is for, you should always consult an investment advisor before investing in anything, and this is just for educational purposes. The opinions on this show are not that of Eugene Peaceworks or the KEPW staff or its producers. Yeah, so that's coming up here on KEPW. LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, but first, I have something really important I got to talk to you about. Okay, there's a scourge on the airwaves that needs to be stopped. I don't know about you, but it's an earworm creator, Justin Bieber. His lyrics are trite. I don't care if he gets his product from Pennsylvania. Just for rhyming holy with hold me, he should be stopped. So don't kill Justin Bieber. Cutting a lock of his hair is only going to slow him down. The way to stop Justin Bieber is to support KEPW by going to kepw.org and becoming a supporting member. Or you can find out how you can kick down some money to KEPW. So stop earworm creators like Justin Bieber and support independent radio like KEPW by going to kepw.org. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Coming up, DJ Sustees explains international finance and what the Fed is doing wrong here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Support us if you can. I said, this is Talk is Cheap here on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio, where we're looking for some support, especially now. All right, so the premise of this show and the premise of what I'm going to talk about today is how the state, and some of you conservatives can agree with me and liberals, I notice the extreme on both sides seem to say the same thing, that our government supports multinational corporations, and it's they subsidize multinational corporations. And the current policy, the current economic policy, is just another example of this. So, and the Federal Reserve, which is a bunch of private banks, is doing the usual thing and supporting the wealthy in this country instead of helping the poor, and doing a linear type of economy rather than a cyclical one. All right, so now I got to say, you know, the economy was messed up and the Fed had to do something quick. But you can trace the cause of this back to, in my opinion, mostly, and most economists would agree with, historians and economists would agree with this, that recessions are usually, and economic swings usually follow a major war, because war costs a lot of money for everybody. And even, and then it's the way, if you listen to George Orwell, it's the way the elite extract money out of the system at the cost of young men and women and children. So, okay, so this, to start this off, this is an article from Forbes. It's hardly a leftist publication. Quantitative easing, massive success or massive failure. This is from 2019, August of 2019, by Tyler Gallagher and from the Forbes Finance Council. Okay, it's been more than a decade since the Federal Reserve launched its first quantitative easing program, and I'm going to explain quantitative easing. They'll explain in this article, so don't get discouraged. It's been more than a decade since the Federal Reserve launched its first quantitative easing program in 2008, and what you're going to see is this is it's a monetarist policy, not a Keynesian policy. And it ends up causing, it's probably going to cause inflation, but it also, and that's partly what this article is asking, is does it really help the everyman, and including white middle class, or does it help the elite? And the other thing I'm going to talk about is government spending. Whether you believe in government spending or not, does it necessarily, depending on the way it's done, does it cause inflation? And I would argue that if you used a Keynesian method, which is not socialism, but it's where the government steps in to help businesses correct the economy when businesses screw up, as they usually do. All right, so, sorry, let me start again. It's been more than a decade since the Federal Reserve launched its first quantitative easing program in 2008, instilled after the disastrous global recession, which caused many U.S. businesses to bite the dust and people to watch their savings dwindle. Since then, some have credited QE and its subsequent phases, QE2, QE3, and now QE4, with accelerating the U.S. recovery. QE has purportedly done the same for the U.K., where it started in 2009, and it also helped the Eurozone through a period of economic crisis before formally ending at the end of 2018. In Japan, banks started monetary easing by writing off more than 50.8 trillion in yen in bad loans from 1995 through 1998. Although it was not yet called QE, the Bank of Japan also procured trillions of yen in commercial paper. So they didn't bail out the average homeowner. This is me now. They didn't bail out the average homeowner. They procured trillions of yen in commercial paper with government money between October 1997 and October 1998. Since Japan formally introduced QE as part of the Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's economic reform in 2012, it has helped create approximately 2.3 million jobs. So, you know, does a lot of great stuff, but it remains to be seen what type of inflation it's going to cause. Many U.S. traders, where the track record of Keynesian economics has been a resounding, well, not a resounding, but a fairly successful, proven success, QE and monetarist policy, and Keynesian economics was vetted by many universities and economists, whereas monetary policy has been vetted in basically the Wall Street Journal and not vetted by academia, whereas Keynesian economics has been. Okay, many U.S. traders, continuing on in the article, many U.S. traders love the QEs because the Fed poured extra money into the economy. They also love massive stock buybacks by corporations, which support their stock prices. In other words, the Fed bought stock in corporations, or enabled corporations to buy their stock back, causing a shortage. All you have to understand in this is the law of supply and demand. It's all law of supply and demand. There's a shortage of stocks, so the stocks went up. There's less stocks, so the price of the stock goes up. There's less stock because the corporations bought back their stock, basically taking it out of the market, which support their stock prices. And in fact, stock buybacks could hit record levels in 2019. However, financial traditionalists are less enthusiastic because of concerns about the sources of the additional funds and the economic turmoil QEs can trigger. QE stimulates the economy by making it easier for businesses to borrow money. And of course, there were, you know, we saw a surge in the housing market because of low interest rates, caused houses to go up in price, and a huge homeless problem, but that's not what the article says. Okay, so it stimulates. It's easier for businesses to borrow money, and these aren't your mom and pop businesses, really. Although some of them got loans too. In the United States, the Fed buys securities from its member banks and adds resources to capital markets. As QE increases the U.S. money supply, the Fed issues credit to the banks' reserves to buy the securities. The rationale behind QE is to lower interest rates and thereby stimulate economic growth and allow banks to make more consumer loans. By increasing the money supply, QE keeps the value of the U.S. currency low. Exports become cheaper, so this is supporting an export market instead of making the U.S. self-sufficient. Now we're dependent on exports, making us further dependent on exports. Become cheaper so they can sell more exports, and the nation's stocks get more foreign consideration. All right, so just as an aside here, they're also what the Fed is doing is buying the bad loans that the banks have that no one wants, and that way is increasing the bank's reserves and allowing them to loan money at cheap rates. But the other thing they're doing is, just as an aside, you know, many people don't realize this, but the banks, if you remember in the Depression, after the Great Depression, we made it mandatory for banks to hold reserves. They didn't keep any reserves, basically, and that's what caused the Great Depression, is the banks, there was a run on the bank and we couldn't get our money out of the bank. So now they're required to keep these reserves. But what many people don't realize is that the American taxpayer pays them 6% interest on these reserves. The reserves sit in an account at the Federal Reserve, and the American taxpayer pays them for these reserves, even though it's for their own good for them to keep reserves. Okay, so there's a subsidy right there. Why do I, the taxpayer, have to pay a bank to keep reserves? And is that capitalism? Looks like a direct subsidy to me. To the banks. Okay, many people, look this up. Please look all this stuff up. Please research this stuff yourself. Don't take my word for it. Okay, so continue on in the Forbes article. Some economists and traders see other positive economic effects in the QE in the United States. The Fed buys treasuries, which increases their demand. Okay, because it increases their demand. Because what would have happened? What happened was when the economy collapsed, nobody had the money to buy treasury bills. So you have to increase the yield, the price of treasury bills, the amount, the interest rate on treasury bills. You have to increase that to encourage people to buy that. And when you increase the interest rate on treasury bills, that increases interest rates throughout the economy, possibly the world economy, because all interest rates are based on the treasury interest rates. Okay. So let me say it again. The interest rates, because the Fed, because people didn't have enough money to buy treasury bills, they would have had to raise the interest rate on treasury bills. So instead, they bought the treasury bills themselves, making a shortage of treasury bills, meaning that they don't have to pay such high interest rates because there's a shortage of treasury bills. And so it doesn't matter whether people are demanding treasury bills or not. Or so now there's an increased demand of treasury bills because they have created an artificial shortage of treasury bills. Okay, so that's how they kept the interest rates down. They bought treasury bills because no one was buying them. So there was an increased supply, which meant that they had to raise the price of raise the interest rate because there was because nobody wanted them. You had to raise interest rates to encourage people to buy treasury bills. So they bought the treasury bills themselves. Okay, so since treasuries are the source of long-term interest rates, it also supposedly keeps auto, furniture, and other consumer debt rates reasonable. This is true for corporate bonds as well, so businesses can expand with less worry. Then there are risks of relying on QE. Some economists believe that QE only benefits wealthy borrowers. By using QE, this is Forbes saying this, by using QE to inundate the economy with more money, governments maintain artificially low interest rates while providing consumers with extra money to spend. This also can lead to inflation. Economists quibble as to whether inflation now exists, but worldwide food prices have been going up, gas prices are again on the rise, and various other goods and services cost more. Now, this is the quantitative monetary policy that they're talking about. They think that because people have more money, they're going to spend more on things. But that's not why these prices are going up. And I don't want to get into why prices are going up because they stopped producing it. And food prices have gone up, in my opinion, because globalization, the global food production model is a complete and dismal failure. So QE can also have the reverse effect on economies. Central banks can simply decide to use the extra funds to increase their capital reserves in their loan portfolio, not passing on the reduced rates to consumers. In the United States, the Fed cannot force banks to lend to anyone. QE can, therefore, possibly lead to social unrest if the rich and large corporations can borrow at the lower rates, leaving average citizens in their wake. QE also increases the deficit, which impacts all taxpayers, but has less effect on the wealthy. Okay, so now they have loaned money to the average middle-class homeowner, but far and away, they've given money to corporations. And think about this. Okay, so what they've done is this movie, The Big Short. They bought all these mortgage-backed securities, which are the failed subprime mortgages. They bought those up because the banks were just sitting on them, and they couldn't loan out money because they had all these failed mortgages. So instead of and those properties were all foreclosed on, and the people evicted, causing a huge homeless crisis. So instead of bailing out the homeowners and getting the people in houses, even if the loans were subprime, the government could have put money into bailing out, and it's $40 trillion. We're talking $25 trillion, probably going to be $40 trillion by the time they're done. They could have spent bailing out homeowners, but instead they used the money to bail out U.S. corporations. Now, there's this thing called moral hazard, and what that means is, well, you know, if we bail out all these subprime mortgages, you know, people are just going to intentionally default knowing they're going to be bailed out. Well, at $25 trillion, who is the moral hazard? Where is the moral hazard? Isn't there moral hazard in bailing out? So these banks, if you bail out them for making the subprime loans, isn't it going to encourage them to just make more bad business decisions? And which is worse? You know, we had after World War II, we had the GI Bill, and it gave low interest rates to people to get them in houses, and that caused a huge economic boom because now people have houses and they have a certain amount of wealth. So instead, they just threw all these people out, and then, you know, and they have purchasing power because they start with a house and they can move up from that. Okay, so, but instead, they bailed out the banks, and who, moral hazard, isn't there some moral hazard in bailing out banks who made bad loans? And the loans, the reason the loans were defaulted was because there weren't good paying jobs, and because I'm going to get into more of where your money goes, why increased wages does not necessarily cause inflation. If money is spent, is not looted from the treasury and money is spent properly. I'm going to get into that. So continuing on with this article. But if, for example, QE has run its course, it leaves behind low interest rates that give central banks little ammo to battle the next economic downturn. In other words, this is the monetarist policy they're saying, is that they raise interest rates to stop inflation, which, look this up on yourself, in my opinion, does not work. And the question remains as to whether QE has gone too far worldwide. Can the United States afford a $30 trillion debt, which is what this is going to end up costing? Some say $40 trillion. And, you know, that money is basically just a giveaway to the elite, mostly. And has thrown people out of their houses. Even with low interest rates, is the current worldwide social unrest with food, inflation, and a wealth gap an unintended byproduct of QE lending practices? In other words, are the massive corporate stock buybacks by cheap money from QE and low interest rates from the Fed that have fueled the decade-long stock market rally a success or a failure? All right, so this is, like I say, this is an artificial rise in stock prices. And, okay, so you should bail out. So a lot of pension funds and people's retirement was invested in the stock market. So that's why they had to do something. But what if they, so let me get, all right, so let me get, I'll get to that one after the break here. So so this is all neoliberalist policy. And what my definition of neoliberal, the first time I heard the word neoliberalism was in Holly Sklar wrote a book called Trilateralism. And even Al Gore and all these politicians belong to the Trilateralist Commission, which is basically the Bilderberger group, which is a bunch of elite people that decide for us, and they're unelected people that decide what the world is going to do. And this is where globalization came from. And this is where supply-side Milton Friedman did supply-side economics, which is this trickle-down theory that if we support all the rich people, that all this money will be that they'll spend all this money on us, which has proven not to be true. In fact, if you read what they did with their tax dollars to avoid taxes and invest in foundations that furthered, like the Koch brothers, furthered their these policies rather of malfeasance rather than and wealth extraction rather than put money in at the bottom where it would increase. Okay, so what I'm saying is the reason inflation, raising wages doesn't necessarily cause inflation is it's where the money goes, where the money goes in, where the government spends its money. So whether you believe in government spending or not, if you give money to a welfare mother and she spends it on cigarettes and beer, you might actually see that money someday. Whereas when you give it to a rich person, they put it in the bank and then loan it back to people. And this is the rentier class and the financial class. So because the money, they're not, you'd be better off setting the money on fire if you wanted to stop inflation and burning it. But because you're not burning it, it's in the hands of war profiteers and real estate investment trusts that invest in these real estate concerns that corporations that these real estate mortgage funds that make money off of raising rent. They raise the rent every 10% a year. And so, you know, when people say they'd be better off pissing it down a rat hole, that's actually true. They would be better off. We would all be better off if they had just taken the money and pissed it down a rat hole. All right, so, quantitative easing is a continuance of supply-side economics. All right, so let me play you. You might say we're walking a tightrope here, and I didn't do justice to Stevie Ray Vaughan last week, so let me play you a couple of tightrope and crossfire, because we're also in a crossfire. But before I do that, let me play you this trailer from The Big Short. And what you have to understand is the word tranches is that's what what they're doing is they're bundling, and this is what the Fed bought with your quantitative easing, is the banks had good loans and bad loans, and they mixed all the good loans and bad loans together in a mortgage fund. And unfortunately, there were more bad loans than there were good loans in these mortgage funds. And like I say, instead of the Fed bailing out the homeowners with some kind of low interest loan that probably would have cost them half as much or quarter as they did by bailing out corporations, they bought all these loans, which will probably cause inflation because the money didn't go to, I'll get into that when I get back, but it didn't go into things we could actually use. It went to subsidize multinational corporations. So here's The Big Short. KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. Also streaming online at KEPW.
Michael, how are you?
I found something really interesting.
The whole housing market is propped up on these bad loans. They will fail.
The housing market is rock solid.
It's a time bomb.
So Mike Burry, who gets his hair cut at Supercuts and doesn't wear shoes, knows more than Alan Greenspan.
Dr. Mike Burry, yes, he does.
You know what? I'm pissed off.
American people.
We're getting screwed by the big banks.
And I am getting madder and madder.
It's unbelievable.
Then this guy walks into my office and says,
there's some shady stuff going down.
All the banks were having a big old party. A few outsiders saw it when no one else could.
The whole world economy might collapse.
I'm sure the world's banks have more incentives than greed.
You're wrong.
No one's paying attention.
The banks got greedy. We can profit off of their stupidity.
You want to bet against the banks?
I think we're either high or having a stroke. Kind of brilliant.
Fraud has never, ever worked. Eventually, things go south. When the hell did we forget all that?
How can the banks let this happen?
It's fueled by stupidity.
But that's not stupidity, that's fraud.
Tell me the difference between stupid and illegal, and I'll have my wife's brother arrested.
Do you have any idea what you just did? You just bet against the American economy.
If you're wrong, you can lose it all.
The banks and defrauded the American people. Now we can kick them in the teeth.
Okay, here we go.
You target strippers
with bad loans.
Mm-hmm.
They're all cash rich.
Not going to be able to refinance.
On all my loans?
What do you mean, all your loans?
I have 5 houses and a condo.
We'll be right back.
Okay, the show's Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Beastworks, Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kpw.org. Please kick down to us by going to kpw.org and there it is. Sorry, I almost lost tightrope there. The opinions on the show are not that of KPW at all, or anybody but mine. Please do not do any type of investing without consulting an investment advisor, financial advisor. This is for educational purposes only. Okay, so the show's called Talk is Cheap because I try to bring you some solutions. And again, this is my opinion. But before I do that, I just want to talk about last week I was talking about Erdogan, because what they're going to do is raise interest rates. Okay, I guarantee you. I'm not going to guarantee you because, like I say, you need to talk to a financial advisor. But they're going to raise interest rates, okay? Because they think that that's going to stop inflation, that when inflation is, you know, higher oil prices, it's an external thing. Think about it. How can raising the price of something cause lower prices? It's madness, and it's a direct subsidy to the elite because they just park their money in the bank and earn instead of taking a risk on it. Which one thing about quantitative easing, one thing that's gone on is they've at least taken risk in the stock market. But really, what risk is there when you've got free money? All right, so what I said last week is Erdogan in Turkey is keeping interest rates down because he thinks high interest rates cause inflation. Okay, but what I've neglected to say was also, and I said this today, the interest rates cause exports, increase the price of exports. So that's the other reason why he's keeping interest rates down, is because he can export probably oil or whatever resource Turkey has. I didn't look it up. But also the reason they want him to raise interest rates, A, is because they want to export their own stuff. The people that want him to raise, the other countries that want him to raise interest rates. And also they want to invest, they want to loan him money at high, and get a high rate of return on that money. And this is globalization. What they're going to do is they're going to extract research. They're going to use that money to build infrastructure for corporations. They're not going to make micro loans to small businesses in Turkey when they loan money to Turkey. Where is that money going to go? It's going to go to building giant projects that benefit multinational corporations, and then they're going to extract a bunch of stuff from Turkey. Okay, so just watch and see what happens. You heard it here first on KPW.org, LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. All right, so all is not lost. There are some solutions. Okay, so what if, I've talked about this before, and I'm well versed on this story because I was one of the first people to report it. If you don't mind me tooting my own horn, the Immokalee workers in Florida worked for Taco Bell, and what they did is they raised the price of a chalupa by one penny, and by doing that, this is the percentages. Okay, this is where higher wages don't necessarily, it's much more beneficial to raise wages. It's a very efficient way of improving your economy, actually, rather than causing inflation. Okay, so they raised the price of a chalupa by one penny, and they were able to double, because they were paid so low, they were able to double the wages of the tomato pickers for the tomatoes at Taco Bell's, that went into Taco Bell's chalupa. Okay, doubling their purchasing power, and which you would think would improve the economy. Okay, so it only costs one penny to double the wages, and granted, their wages were so low that doubling them still didn't cost that much, but yet they were able to increase their purchasing power by twice by raising wages. Okay, so and again, so now you've raised wages, so now the chalupa costs more. It costs more to go, and there's things that the prices have increased on things because people are paying more for wages. But what if you didn't have to pay so much for health care? This is what's wiping people out. What if the government, instead of bailing out corporations, had given us a health care program? And that, again, and that's, you can view this as socialism if you want, but what if we pooled all our money together and got a good deal from hospitals and the pharmaceutical industry by pooling all our money together and having a third party run that thing, which, I don't know, maybe that should be the government that runs the healthcare industry. But if you can come up with a third party, you know, they had Kaiser, too, was a big healthcare provider from the Nixon administrations. All right, and then what about, instead of bailing out everybody's pensions, what about tax breaks to corporations, to businesses that provide pensions? So, because that's just it, we need pension reform. Pensions are almost non-existent. And my father used to have, I've talked about this before, my father, his whole heart attack surgery was, I don't think my mother paid hardly anything for his open heart surgery in the 70s, would have been the 70s when it was kind of experimental. So it couldn't have been cheap to have open heart surgery in the 70s, totally paid for by his work, he wasn't making, wasn't a high, radically high paying job. All right. And what about rehabbing these houses instead of tearing them down and causing a housing shortage? And I have personal experience in this. I was squatting a house in 29 Palms, and the police came one day and threw me out, or I fled from that and just in the nick of time. And later that year, they came and tore that house down. Granted, you know, it had some, probably some rats in there and had some problems with the house, but it could have been fixed. And it broke my heart. There's what I was told is a little old lady had owned this house, and she had this huge cactus garden with every cactus almost like a microcosm of the of Joshua Tree National Park in her yard, including mesquite trees and trees. And it's hard to get a tree to grow in there, but once trees get established, they tap into the aquifer down in the desert. And especially a mesquite lives with seasonable rains. They can weather dry years once you get a tree established. All that died because they tore her house down, all because of quantitative easing. Because we have a monetarist policy of quantitative easing instead of bailing out homeowners and loan and people that just want to have a house. Okay, so and then I visited Trimbleplex, I think it's called, in Detroit, which is a kind of an anarchist community there. And the guy there was telling me what they were doing was tearing down, and you can see this online, they tear down all the beautiful brick-built houses that need a lot of work to rehab them. It would take a lot of work. It would take artisan labor, high-paying jobs to rehab these houses, which would, again, stimulate the economy because you're raising wages, high-wage jobs, real quality jobs. And what they did is they replaced them with these cracker box houses that they brought in outside labor, cheap outside labor, some of it immigrant. Not that I have anything against immigrant labor, but I'm just saying they use cheap labor, low-quality houses is what he told me they were doing, and you can see this. Please research this stuff yourself. You can see the empty lots where they've torn down brick buildings. So, and again, like I say, it would take a lot of work to restore those buildings, but they're incredible architecture in Detroit, the houses. So, and what about rooftop solar? Why didn't we, like what they're doing now is they're putting, you know, huge centralized power projects that we have to pay for a line to run to your house. What about putting solar panels on people's roofs? So therefore there's one less cost for them to, then they can afford the higher prices that are caused by higher wages because they don't have to pay some guy to run a line to send you power over a wire to your house. You can produce your own power in most areas. Granted, there might be some areas that you can't do rooftop solar. And instead of centralized wind power, there might, you know, there is a way you can have a Savinus windmill on your house, although those aren't very efficient. I work as a truck driver, just full disclosure, because that's the only, I have a degree in sustainable design, but I couldn't get a job in that because there's not any financing for sustainable design. They need people to crawl into houses and blow insulation in houses, and I'm too old for that. So I became a truck driver about 7 years. The Trucking Association, now think about it, I'm just using this as an imperfect example. Trucking Association wants the roads fixed because it costs them more money in downtime when their trucks break down from a broken road and bridges that are out. So that would cause lower prices if the money, instead of being blown up by sending it to and extracted by war profiteers, and instead of the money being and banks in the financial and rentier class looting the treasury, the money could have been spent on highways and things and commons that we all use. School, you know, I don't have to tell you how an educated people would would get higher wages and more purchasing power in the economy. Cyclical economy. You can call it capitalism if you want, but it would be a cycle, small, localized cycles, sustainable economy, self-sufficient economy. And my own pet peeve is, let's get a space elevator. If you really want to do tourism in space, you don't shoot this giant phallic symbol to penetrate the atmosphere. Let's get a space elevator. We got carbon nanotubes. Think of all the inventions that would happen over making a space elevator. And it's kind of a feminine concept there of a ring that slides across up and down a cable. Space elevator. Where's the space elevator? We need a space elevator to do research in space. Okay, that money, rather than blow up countries and then profit from their reconstruction, why don't we have a space elevator? Okay, so there's some solutions for you. From Talk is Cheap, in a sustainable way. All right, so thanks for listening to that rant, and write your congressman and vote these guys out of office. You know, I play this, I'm not going to play this, I'm not going to play this today, is Rage Against the Machine is a bootleg version or a live version that he says that these people should be hung and tried and shot. I just want to say I don't believe in violence, and these people, really, seriously, they need to be put on trial. We don't want to do the like the Turner Diaries and like the insurrection. We don't want to hang the vice president. We want to put these guys on trial. We want to put Saddam Hussein on trial. We should have put Hitler on trial if he hadn't killed himself, supposedly. You put these people on trial, and you'll find a multinational corporation somewhere behind there. And you put these people, you remove these people from society, they're messed up. They need to be removed from society. They need help, okay? So, yeah, put them on trial, remove them from society, put them in a prison, get them out of society where they cannot do any harm. That's what needs to be done. Not a violent revolution, not a kangaroo trial, a real trial with a jury of their peers. And then you're going to find out what's really going on and find some real solutions that way. That's another solution. All right? Because, you know, we're walking a tightrope right now. And hopefully we're going to stop cutting trees. And that's the other thing, is this money should have gone to rework the world's economy and make it less carbon and make it carbon neutral is what we could have done with quantitative easing and the money that they spent on quantitative easing. But instead, we're walking a tightrope. Thought I'd been away.
my rib. Knee deep in hot water. Broke out in the cold sweat. Can't catch a turtle in this rat race. Feels like I'm losing time. And I'm praying that way. Made a Mount Shadow. Face of grace. Heart full of darkness. Spot out of my face. There's love all around me. But I was looking for revenge. Thank God I never found me. This would have been the end. I was walking the tightrope. Stepping on my bridge. Walking the tightrope. What's a shame and a sin. Walking the tightrope, bring it all around. We're walking the tightrope from the mouth to mouth. We'll be right back.
U.S. presidents, as were applied to the Nazis after World War II, that every single one of them, every last rich white one of them from Truman on, would have been hung to death and shot. And this current administration is no exception. It should be hung and tried and shot. As any war criminal should be. But the challenges that we face, they go way beyond administrations, way beyond elections, way beyond every 4 years of pulling levers, way beyond that. Because this old rotten system has become so vicious and cruel that in order to sustain itself, it needs to destroy entire countries and profit from their reconstruction in order to survive. And that's not a system that changes every 4 years. It's a system that we have to break down generation after generation after generation after generation.
Eugene Toxic's Right to Know program was created and is governed by Section 54 of the Eugene City Charter. It requires that businesses meeting certain criteria report their hazardous substance use to the city, that the city make that information public, and that hazardous substance users pay fees as necessary to operate the program. For more information on the Eugene Toxic's Right to Know program, contact Program Manager Joe Epley at 541-682-7118.